podcast?
Movie podcast.
Are you getting this?
Plugged in. It's just the thing he does.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Movie Podcast, everybody.
Oh, no.
Episode number 165. I am your host, Tiggs, and with me, as always, are Russ.
Complete with cookies.
Peter.
I am Peter.
And Alex.
Shit, I was going to do Nosferatu. God damn it.
Yes, no, say your joke from before. No one heard it.
I thought you.
There it is. All right, great. So we are starting this off with a banger. Happy New Year, everybody. Hope you had a good New Year. Nothing crazy has been going on in the world. So we've been watching some movies. We had a really long list of movies that we had seen since the last time that we had casted. And we cut it down a fair amount. Good job, us. The Oscar nominations are out today, but we will not be talking about them right now. That is just a little spoiler. Or teaser, there we go, for a couple of months from now, probably. Right after the Oscars, we should probably talk about the Oscars, or maybe, you know, before Cannes. But let's kick this off, because we're going to have a lot to say about a lot of these films, I think. So Y2K, I think, why not start with it? Yeah.
Okay. A movie that, like, utterly bombed at the box office.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Totally.
Kyle Mooney, written and directed.
Yep.
I absolutely love his previous film that he wrote or co-wrote and starred in, Brigsby Bear.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, possibly one of my favorite movies of the decade.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's, I praise.
It hit me real hard. So I didn't see this in theaters because of the reception was so poor for Y2K.
Yes, it was.
And
it was pretty, like, it dropped screens pretty fast as well. Like, that weekend it was in a bunch, and then by the next week it was like you could see it at 4:25 and that was about it.
Yeah, I saw it the weekend it came out, and it was only in it was playing at the Palisades by me, but there was like two screenings.
Wow.
And I was like, it's the weekend it came out. Like, we can't give this like a little bit more love. And there were not very many people in the theater.
There was one other person in my theater.
Yeah. Granted, wow. it's a New Year's Eve movie, but I don't think that's a genre, or I don't think comedies are the right time to come. This is the right time of the year for a comedy to come out. I think our two main.
Yeah.
Other than, like, no kind of brand recognition in it.
Yeah, I feel like A24, if your movie isn't, like, something that is gonna that's gonna be big genre, or it's not gonna be Oscar-y, that shit needs to drop in the early fall. Like, this could have been a kids going back to school movie. This could have been a September or an October easily, and I think it would have captured a little bit more of an audience because it's still got school in it, so it doesn't matter if it's New Year's or not.
I also think Kyle Mooney's sense of humor is like kind of like, you know, he's pretty weird, so I can see how like the people that did see it were maybe confused by it.
Yeah, I liked it fine, and that is my fault because Kyle Mooney's brand of shit is my brand of shit. So I was like, oh, it's Kyle Mooney and A24 with a fuckload of practical effects and like set at the time that I was exactly the age of these people. I can't imagine a more perfect thing for me. And for the first, I don't know, up until like all hell breaks loose, I was like so on board. I was like, this was what it was.
Oh yeah.
Like a lot of nostalgia based movies get that part wrong. They make it, no one's experience was everything. If you were in high school, you only really fucked with the shit you fucked with. And I think this movie did a good job of showing everything, but making it very clear, like, this person was like that. that person was like that. I don't know. I just thought he did a really good job of capturing a real version of when we were all in high school. And then all hell breaks loose and I enjoyed it. I just think my expectations were so high from the beginning that it was unable to meet probably outsized expectations. Cause even that Netflix thing he did a few years ago, Saturday morning, all-star hits, like if anybody watched it, it's like very Adult Swim. And it's like one of my favorite things he's done. And I brought all of that into this movie and I simply liked it. And that sounds like not a ringing endorsement. But it's really it's exactly for me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I enjoyed it.
It's nostalgia bait that also doesn't hold your hand with the references a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So I can see how younger folks would probably just be confused.
Mm. Yeah.
Like he brings Ken Burns level detail to nostalgia.
Yep. He just has a camera panning over everything.
And like that is this is like almost more impressive than it is good. And I don't mean that as a slight, because the practical effects are fantastic. The fact that this movie was made on basically a $15 million budget, I was like, holy shit, this guy is so creative and so talented. Like, that's what I was saying the whole time. But as far as the story and the plot, it didn't grab me the way I expected it to. And it even gave me Fred fucking Durst. And
two times this year we've had Fred Durst.
Yeah. It's been a great year.
It really worked for me. So for the first half, for me, I get everything you're saying. Like the first half wasn't working as well for me, oddly.
Oh, interesting.
And it's down to one character who does die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Really.
Off, and that's where I actually ended up liking the movie a little bit more. He was not working for me, and I was very surprised by that because
that's strange.
I don't know how to not spoil this while talking about it, but he's a performer I've liked in the past, and it just was not clicking for me.
Okay.
But like, so from the crazy stuff on with that aesthetic of how silly he goes with the machine uprising, I really enjoyed. There's one death in this that is so fucking funny.
Oh yeah.
Like one quick surprise death that is like, I think like right up Kyle Mooney's like alley for comedy. That I think is so great, the rollerblading accident.
Oh yeah.
Which I thought was kind of perfect, and I like the smaller group that this movie becomes about.
Yeah, I do enjoy the group. The character was working for me, except for maybe like one kind of weird decision that they make right before their death, which I was like, that just doesn't seem like the thing that this guy would do, or girl. Who knows? Spoilers. But I tend to agree that I really enjoyed like the beginning of this movie, basically until all the killing started. And then I was just like, all right, this is fine. I almost wanted it to be like weirder, like Hot Rod weird, like just a That's scene true. Of them just saying cool beans yes. back and forth yeah. for like 10 yes. minutes.
I get that. But I completely see that. I thought the movie was going... Like, this movie kind of plays it straight, even though it's a comedy horror. It plays this, like, whole situation that, like, the joke is that it's 2000s-based technology.
Right.
Which is very much a joke for me. But I thought that there would be more, like, really subverting a genre. Oh, I hate how I'm talking. But, you know, I thought he would subvert the genre more than he did, as opposed to just kind of upholding the genre. That makes sense. Totally. Yeah.
I get that.
And that is, again, all expectations. If I didn't see, if I knew nothing about this movie and you put it on without me knowing anything about it, I'd love it that much more.
Yeah.
But I this was a victim of my own expectations.
Yeah, totally.
And so that's what I think. I'm on the opposite end of that, because I saw it out of theaters with lower expectations that it surpassed mine. So I think it's just a classic case of how you went into it.
Yep.
huge shout out to one moment of a hacking sequence that uses the same graphics as the movie Hackers at one point.
Oh yeah. Yes, yeah. That was great. That was fantastic. Oh my God, I was so happy to see that. Oh man. All right. Anybody else got anything else to say on Y2K, or should we move on?
See it, because literally no one did. I think
see it. It's out. See it. It's like, I think it's on Hulu now. Yeah. It's on something already. Yes.
It's on Hoopla, I believe, is where I might have watched it.
No, it's not. It's not on any of those things. I stole it. Oops.
All right. So let's go from one bomb to another and talk about Kraven the Hunter.
Oh boy.
I can't believe how many swings the Spider-Man adjacent Sony universe has attempted.
Yeah.
It's like, especially, I don't know why. You remember when like the online Morbius bit was going so strong that Sony said, maybe we'll re-release Morbius for 1 week.
Yes.
And yeah. Because all these people are joking about it, and every single person on the internet was like, no, you fucking idiots. That wasn't what the joke was.
No, the joke is your movie is dog shit. Like,
yeah.
You fucking idiots.
I just don't know how, at post-Morbius, we got three more movies.
I know.
To be fair, I think Madame Web is an absolute treasure.
Madame Web is watchable. It's like, it's an all-time terrible. I gotta sit down and watch this a little bit high or a little bit drunk.
Yeah, and it's a movie that like I now want to watch people watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kraven, however, is the worst kind of movie.
I couldn't get through it.
It wants to be I don't know if it was the editor or who, somebody along the way in Madame Web knew it was a piece of shit and just let it be a piece of shit. Somebody was like, nope, Kraven, we're going to make this one work. It's going to be R-rated. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. It's not Kraven.
No reason.
There were reshoots. Yeah. There were reshoots to put in more gore.
Right. Like really? That's not what people, I don't know. That's not what people go to most comic book based movies for, you fucking morons.
And also, right. I don't think like, even though like, yeah, he was one of the main villains in the Spider-Man 2 game, I don't think that like people are clamoring for a Spider-Man-less Kraven movie.
Well, it's clearly the thing that they're doing in which bad guys are kind of heroes no one gives a shit about.
Also, yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And like, and you know, to Madame Web's credit, at least Spider-Man shows up at the end, right? Baby Spider-Man.
And she's not a villain. Like, stop giving us kind of anti-hero villain stories and then end them with and then maybe he'll fight Spider-Man at one point. And they're just like, that's not what this person would do.
Right.
You taking the comic book out of the comic bookness, where it's just like, I don't need it. I don't want to relate. I don't care. Just give me something crazy.
And you're doing that with characters that don't have like any cultural cachet. Like,
right.
I think like Sony has to recognize, doing these anymore. Like the Spider-Man has an awesome rogues gallery. Yes.
Yeah.
But his rogues gallery doesn't like, people aren't as fluent with it as Batman's. You could get away with making Batman type content based on villains a la Joker or the Penguin show. You can do that because there has always been a Batman on. The Spider-Man that most people know is either the movies that have not scratched the surface on villains or the animated series from the 90s.
Yeah.
So there is now there is the video game, which has like its own shit with it. But there isn't enough like regular Spider-Man content besides him, despite him being like every kid's favorite superhero. That to go this niche is like insane. You could maybe get away with a Goblin movie if Goblin goes bad, or like, I don't know, Venom. Yes, you can do Venom.
Totally, Venom but works. Carnage, can't maybe.
Kraven, you can't. You can do all the symbiote shit, But Kraven is such a down the line villain.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's not anyone. And then to make a movie about a villain that's that niche, that means all of the characters are going to be that much more niche. Like, Calypso? Foreigner? What?
Just redo these Punisher, were like, right?
These like, were comic book Punisher, card. Man. Like, when comic book cards used to be a thing, those were cards that I would have been like, I'd rather have no cards than a Calypso. You know what I mean? Like, and they keep like insisting on only making movies about the shit that even when you were a kid and reading comics and into them, those were the issues I didn't fucking care about. And then everybody goes back to, well, Kraven's Last Hunt was pretty good. I'm like, okay, so you're telling me a fucking 40-year-old character has had like one really good arc that you can talk about. And well, you think that that's worth spending $100 million and then an additional $100 million in marketing so that you have to clear $500 million worldwide to be profitable? You think you need, you can make a half a billion dollars on a guy who had one good story? Good luck.
Yeah. It's so, especially on that, as you said, Calypso, inexcusable. Like, you don't have to try to make that a character that no one's heard of anyway in the first place. Yeah. And my biggest thing about this movie is the Foreigner. What a completely boring, like, visually inert character that A, I've never heard of before. And then B, it's just it's so.
And boring. You got Christopher Abbott, who, granted, we're probably going to talk about him in another movie I haven't seen, is a guy who usually does interesting things.
Yeah.
When I read your Letterboxd review of this, Pete, and you wrote that, I had forgotten about that. And I was just like, are you talking about the Jackie Chan movie? Like, is this what we're talking about? Because that was a pretty good movie. Like, but yeah, no, it was a villain. Okay.
So boring. Like, there's it's just every single time he would, like, display his power, you're just like, are you kidding me? This is the bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So dumb. Yeah, it was goofy.
Like, Alex, how far did you get into it?
Half an hour.
That's the best part, honestly. I kind of enjoyed the beginning until he jumps off the building, and then it all became just CGI goop. And after he jumped off the building, I was just like, okay, I'm out. But like, I was kind of like enjoying some of it. I was laughing at some bits, the elevator bit where, you know, it gets the guy open, keep it open, stuff like that. I was like, oh, this is fine. This is dumb.
Russell Crowe innocent. Russell Crowe having a great time.
Yes.
Doing like such great late career work from Russell Crowe. Just like, I will show up in anything and be just kind of a little silly. And really give this role way more than it deserves, which is kind of fun. I don't think he's ever really phoning anything in.
No.
Which has been a good time.
Like, the more Russell Crowe you give me at this point, the better. Pope's Exorcist still rules.
Yeah. So looking at my ratings, because I looked at the other day, thinking about putting together our top tens, also thinking about the worst movie of the year. Yeah. And I actually have...
No, there's only one.
I have Kraven with a higher rating than Madame Web. And Madame Web is in that, like, block, the potential worst movie of the year block. But I would never call Madame Web the worst movie of the year. And I would actually say I'd rather watch it again than Kraven, even though I think it's, like, objectively a worse movie.
Oh, yeah.
But like, worse in, as you said, Alex, worse in that way that's like, fuck it, I'll watch Madame Web again.
Oh, I'd watch Madame Web right now if someone
told me. Yeah, so would I.
And, like, I this has one. Such a, like... Aaron Taylor Johnson is a guy, like, he is the definition of fetch. They are going to keep making this guy happen. And Russell Crowe, Fred Hechinger, who is like one of my favorite dudes around. This movie has a good cast. Yeah. J.C. Chander has, like, pretty much not directed a dog shit movie yet until this. So this has a pedigree.
J.C. Chazé.
It falls into, like, the worst, it's the worst kind of movie, because it is, like, I think, Pete, you said inert for a Foreigner, but the whole movie, that's, like, its issue.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Yeah. Oh, I can see that a mile away. Like, again, Madame, like, the like, for instance, like stuff like the full ADR for the one guy, like that stuff is just like chef's kiss, like yum. Like I love when a movie is that much of a mess, but they tried. Like this one, you can tell they're trying, but like they're trying to be so edgy and all that too. Like I couldn't. I don't know what it was.
It's terrible.
Yeah. All right, we got to move on. Let's not talk about this one anymore. Let's not talk. You know, let's go to a little bit of a happy one. You know what? I actually don't know, but let's talk about Flow.
The prequel to Hustle and Flow.
Hustle. Yep.
Yeah.
What a beautifully animated, well done movie that at some point, when everything just starts like popping, like when a crazy city pops up, I was just like, I don't know what's going on anymore. But yeah, this is cool. Yeah.
it really does kind of hold your hand dipping into the story and then really lets you go hard.
Oh, they're just like, yeah, figure it out.
But like, it's almost like, but in a way that like it let go of your hand and you're kind of on a bouncy castle and having a good time. Because it is very good to look at. It is like, if you like Cats, it's a little panic inducing at sometimes.
Absolutely.
Caitlin loves Cats and hates sea creatures. So watching a cat almost drown only to have like a whale come up from under it almost gave her a panic attack.
Spoiler alert.
Gosh.
And it's just, it was.
Sorry.
But it's really good looking, and then especially like once you get to the like the sequence with the stork later on.
Yes.
Yes.
Then you're kind of just like, fuck it, movie. I'm not even gonna attempt to hold on anymore. I'm just gonna sit back and let this all go and wash over me in these weird ways. And it's very fun.
Yeah. No, it's super fun, and it looks great. Again, it feels so much like. Just like an incredible journey type of thing where you're just like, that's fun. A bunch of animal pals hanging out and like not drowning.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden also, it just gets real weird.
Yeah. But I would play this video game too. Like,
100%. Yeah. 100%.
It's very much like, what was the Journey, the game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah. I can see that.
It's actually very much like, I was thinking it's kind of like the Tale of Princess Kaguya where you're just like, she's going to go to the moon at some point. I don't know when, but once it does, it's going to get real weird. Okay. And then it happens. You're just like, yeah, it was just as weird as I thought.
But a good time, no dialogue. So buckle up if you plan on watching it. All the animal noises are recorded from actual animals.
Yep.
I think the copy, they had a hard time getting the capybara to make noises. So they did mix it with something else, but
that's funny.
All of them are actual animal performances.
They used me
nominated,
for
right?
Yes, yeah. it will lose to Inside Out 2, and we'll have to watch that happen.
Ugh.
This and Wild Robot and the Wallace and Gromit, which I haven't seen the new Wallace and Gromit.
I haven't seen that yet, but yeah.
I just watched it actually the other day. You know, it's good. It's solid. I would say like it's not like maybe my favorite of them, but it's totally solid.
All
right.
Nice.
Yeah, no, it's hard. It's tough to talk about Flow.
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of, it's very much an experience type of thing.
Yeah.
Because there's no talking, because it's so animal centric. But again, it's beautiful. It's quite fun to watch, and it's really short. All right. So let's move on from one panic inducing animal movie to another. And I don't know why I'm not like, actually, I'm just do Sonic 3. Let's do it. Yeah.
Great time.
You saw Sonic.
Great fucking time.
Yeah, I think this series has a hard time balancing its very, very preschool humor and its characters and its intensity. There's a bit of whiplash watching a Sonic movie.
There is.
It's got to go fast, baby.
It's got to go fast.
There definitely is a little bit of that, but I think like this movie figured out a lot faster than the other ones that it needs to just be about the characters we know and give a shit about that are from the games.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we needed the Wachowskis early on just to like make this shit make a little bit of sense and to ground us a little bit. And now that we have them, we don't need them. So these movies, I think I'd love to see these movies kind of go in like almost like how the third Thor movie was just finally, all right, fuck Earth. We're going to be doing other shit for the rest of these movies. I'd like to see the fourth Sonic eventually just, there are enough characters from the game now that you've built up that you can just, you just do those guys. Like, I don't need Tom. Maybe at the very beginning, and it's like, all right, cool, bye. Just
very beginning and very end. That's it.
Give me Sonic. Give me Knuckles. Give me Tails. Give me the team. Give me the, like, give me somehow Jim Carrey, a man who hates a sequel. It's like, I'll do 90 of these, but still find a way to have a little more fun. Like, the dance sequence is, it shouldn't work. Because it's like, nothing, none of this humor is new or fresh at all.
But Jim Carrey is holding nothing back.
What's that?
Yeah.
Jim Carrey is holding nothing back. He is giving his all, which is delightful.
Yeah.
And
goes I think to that show, that's like why this works.
Yes. Like he's just saying, okay, there's not a lot here. So I just have to give every single bit of myself to this. And that works. And you forget like that his physical comedy was not just his like rubbery ass face. It's his whole fucking body.
He just goes nuts with it. And then I don't really have any reverence for Shadow, but Keanu Reeves does nail it.
He's awesome.
He's awesome. The backstory is a little, you're just like, okay.
Yeah. You know? As I said, that's, it's balancing of intensity and silliness, as I said, is very, very weird.
Yeah.
Did anyone watch the Knuckles show that led into this? Yeah,
the Knuckles show ruled. And that's my only criticism with this movie is it basically, it's like an MCU show where like,
oh, they just ignore it.
Yeah. Like they mention one thing. You see Wade Whipple one time, Adam Pally. And that's supposed to kind of let you know that everything that happened in the show happened. But the Knuckles show, I watched on Adam's recommendation. It is just wild show about bowling.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. I guess I got to watch the Knuckles show.
And
right.
If you were looking for a fucking... Like we already mentioned Hot Rod on this cast. There is an episode of Knuckles that feels like the spiritual successor to Hot Rod.
Really?
And it shouldn't work. And it does. It's so good. And it's directed by Yorma Taconi from The Lonely Island. And you can feel it. There's a lot of puppets and people in suits. And I don't know how we got there. But it's so good. The Knuckles show is great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sold me.
Clearly kids are loving these. My other sort of like weird complaint about this is just, it's just annoying to go from Knuckles to Shadow, which are kind of the same character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like.
You wanted Biggs.
Yeah. Why do a sequel that is just another Sonic-like character who is stronger than Sonic and angry and doesn't super understand, like, normalcy? Like,
because these movies are for 8-year-olds.
Yeah, but I said, then why are they so fucking intense sometimes?
Like, yeah, it's true. That is true. Like, the tone doesn't fit
There are movies that I don't personally, like, love because I'm stuck trying to figure out what age they're shooting for.
Yeah.
And I think their net's a little too wide because like clearly they have kids. Kids are fucking obsessed with Sonic.
But so are
Which is wild.
So are adults though.
Yeah. So bring in Amy Rose gets pregnant in the fourth one.
Sonic knows they have to do they really want to
and then he's like I gotta go fast.
All right.
Oh. What's man. Next? Oh. All right. Let's move on. All right. You know what? Peter, Alex, tell us about Queer.
Oh, man. So I didn't realize going into this that it was based off the Burroughs book. I didn't see any.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So I didn't see any trailers or anything like that for somehow. So I kind of didn't know what it was going to be. And then when the movie started and it said like based off, I was like, oh, okay, I get this. This is something that like a 24-year-old angsty Alex would have loved.
Okay.
It's weird. It's
okay.
Like, Peter, like, what would you like? They have a choreographer for a
really good sequence too.
Yeah, a really good sequence. But like,
it's pretty plotless.
Yeah,
it doesn't really hold on any part of the story. Like, there's a story about like a Daniel Craig's character's obsession with this younger man who may or may not be actually kind of straight. And there's also like he's addicted to heroin and he wants to go into the jungle to try.
Well, because
is it ayahuasca?
Yeah, it's ayahuasca because this is a sequel to Junkie. That's why like the first hour is like slice of life, and they use this as a plot device that he's actually addicted to heroin. But like in the book, you know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of skips around. There's some really great moments and sequences in it, but it doesn't really come together to do anything for me, like say anything or
classic movie.
Really a cohesive, like complete product in my mind. Jason Schwartzman is delightful in it though.
He's oh my god, and it's like transformed.
Yeah.
I feel like it's something that like, if you can't sleep one night or something like that, like it's something to like weird to watch at night that's, when you like,
I've, that's kind of been my thinking on it is I feel like that's the right time, but I need it to be like the right, like it's over 2 hours. So it's gotta
be long. It's really long.
So I have to kind of commit to this.
It's broken up into chapters. If you did have to go back to it.
Oh.
There
like
is
a one chapter.
Yeah, exactly. There is one that is like,
I heard of those.
Very David Lynchian rip, and and it's like once you get towards the second half of things, there's not like reality kind of comes undone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm getting more and more interested as you're speaking about
this. It's so weird. It's. Again, I don't think it's. Some people hated it. I don't think it's bad. I think you just
giant city rises out of the water. Weird.
No, not like that. There's you know some moments you're like, you feel like you're in the Red Room or whatever.
Black Lodge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay.
All
right. Like I'm a little bit more interested, but again, like I think we were talking beforehand, it was like I've had the opportunity to watch this for a while, and I've just been like, I don't know.
Yeah, as Alex, I do not know the best time to watch this, as Alex was trying to suss out maybe being at night, but it's long, I think, is the issue.
Yeah.
Maybe start it at night and be fine with finishing it in the morning. I don't know. Yeah. Weird.
Yeah, and I think that like, too, like in case you were wondering if there's gonna be a reference to playing William Tell, of course there is. It's strange. I don't know how I feel about it yet, and it's been a couple weeks.
Yeah. Wow, okay. So you're still like, it's still like marinating.
Yeah.
Oof. The sauce is gonna burn. Let it marinate too long. All right. All right. Let's keep it going. Yeah, let's go to Nickel Boys. I want to talk about Nickel Boys.
I've read the book. I don't super remember everything from the book.
Neither do I.
But the biggest part of this movie obviously is how you feel about the way that it is shot and presented to you.
Yeah.
And I think that works so beautifully well for the half.
Oh, I think it just always works.
I think when we're going pretty fast in time through this boy's life, the way it's filmed is gorgeous. And absolutely, I find so enrapturing. And I think Anjanue Ellis-Taylor is incredible. Absolutely snubbed. Actually, I don't remember who was nominated for Best Supporting, but...
I don't think her.
Kieran Culkin, for sure.
Yeah, Fred Hechinger for Best Supporting Actor for Nicholas. So in the second half, it doesn't
work
for me. I especially don't think it worked for any of the present day sequences.
Oh, see, I thought it really worked. I read the book the weekend before I saw it. And so I didn't know anything about it, and I'd seen the trailer a bunch of times, and it wasn't until after I finished it and I was just like, how are they going to do this? Mm-hmm. How is this going to work? And then I watched the trailer again and I was like, wait, is this whole thing in the first person? And that's when I had seen it, must have been a dozen times, and I never noticed it until that moment. And then I was like, oh, this is how this is going to go. And so I was so excited to see if they could pull it off, how well they would pull it off, seeing it when it was kind of like in a third person mode as well. And like knowing what was going to happen, figuring it all out, and like just seeing how the camera played in that way, I thought really worked well for me.
So I think two things. I think the way it was just shot. Two. Yes, I only think two. I think the way it was shot was incredible in the Nickel Boys in the school time. Loved every minute of it. Yeah. And I think it was, while I didn't like it in more of the present day sequences, I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think creatively it makes sense and it works. I just don't like the choice as much. But I also I read this book so long ago that I did not remember what was going to happen, the significance of the end of the movie in terms of who we're following and who they are. And then once we got to the end, I was like, oh shit, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't love the experience of it. And then I think now if I rewatched it, remembering the whole book, I would appreciate it more.
Yeah. I think it did help to have just read it, know the ending. Mm-hmm. And then to kind of start to notice when it starts to flip between first person perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And why and all. And so I was very enthralled with that as it was happening. And so I just started to enjoy it. And it does feel Sixth Sense, where you're just I should watch that again to see if make sure that everyone thinks he's a ghost. And I do feel there is that still similar feeling about Nickel Boys as well while watching it, but only because I'd seen it. If I wasn't so shocked at that ending, then I think I would just been what the hell did I just watch? And then go back and watch it again and kind of have enjoy it more.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I was, glad, yeah.
I'm glad it showed up a bunch for nominations.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Same.
Because it was kind of quiet. It was a quiet little small movie. I thought I'd get lost in the shuffle, but it somehow made it through.
Yeah, it's weird. Even... here it's been playing at the Angelica and Lincoln Center, and that's it. It just moved to the 1-2-3, and that was so I was I'll go. But it hasn't really, I would have expected to see it in more theaters around.
I don't know why it never really hasn't gone. I don't know if it was one of those movies that was hoping for more of a groundswell and a demand for it to go wide when it was getting maybe it didn't get enough awards press as they hoped to throw it wide, but there's a bunch of stuff that is coming back. Substance is back in theaters.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that was an incredible decision on there, especially with it actually squeaking out two huge nominations.
Yeah.
And Sing Sing is actually getting another re-release puss.
I'm really glad about that.
I really want to see it still.
You should.
I thought it would have been streaming by now, and it's not.
They want that theater money that they didn't try to get before.
Did you see that they're going to put on the play?
Yes, but it's for like it's not really open to the public kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Messed up. All right, let's move on. Let's keep it going. Y'all, talk about The Brutalist.
How much time do we have?
3.5 hours.
So we'll talk about it for 10 minutes. We'll take a 15-minute break, and then we'll talk about it for another 10 minutes.
This movie was just so, it's just too much. It's like really good, but it's something I will never watch again.
I think it
was too much.
Doesn't
really? I don't like one choice towards the second half, which was a little bit more engaging than the first in some ways, because you have to see Adrian Brody's character reconcile his like outward life and his outside aspirations with his like, you know, family and shit. Yeah. But I like this movie was proof that intermissions need to exist for movies that are 2.5 hours, because I was able to fully in anything over 2.5. Just give me and like it's a sliding scale. How long the intermission is with how long the movie is. If you're 3 hour plus movie, give me 15 minutes, please. If you're a 2.5 hour movie, give me like 7. But I really was able to engage with all of it because I knew I was going to be able to take a break. And for me, I really enjoyed the experience. I thought it was it's really masterful. And Brady Corbett, this guy can really fucking make an epic that just looks beautiful on like a $10 million budget. It's just so impressive.
It is crazy how cheap this thing was. And the soundtrack, there's been so many good like sound design soundtracks between like this, between Reznor and Ross and like Challengers, between and Bird. There have been so many good like minimalist type soundtracks this year, or orchestral type soundtracks, or you know, like a electronic soundtrack. I loved the music to this.
Yeah, the score is fantastic. Glad I got that nomination. But as you said, Reznor and Ross absolutely snubbed for the Challengers.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Everything in Challenger is completely snubbed. Well, all right, this can't be the Oscar cast. Let's not get there.
No.
Pete, what did you think about The Brutalist?
Similar to Russ, or the both of you. I think it's a lot. I think it takes a step too far in a couple different places, where it goes from being a really incredible portrait that it's very easy to read into a lot of the stuff, and it wasn't beating you over the head with it. And then in a couple moments really beat you over the head with it, which I thought was, that I just didn't know why it needed to happen. I do like the epilogue. I like the quote unquote feel of the work he was actually doing.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
And I like them not spending a ton of time telling you that. It's very quick. It's just fair. It's just all at the end. I really like the decision in that epilogue to not put old age makeup on Adrian Brody and just cast an old person to sit in a wheelchair.
Yep.
Totally. That's good.
Good idea.
But yeah, I like it. The intermission was nice, and I think it was perfectly placed. It's not like an intermission that's like, we know you've been sitting for so long, we'll give you a break. It really cuts this into two manageable movies.
Yeah.
It's like an hour and 40 minutes on either side of the intermission. So it's perfectly reasonable. I mean, that's a normal size movie. That's even that's a short movie on either side. And I think where the intermission is placed, it brings you into the emotions immediately upon return, because with the train station sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you know, and then a kind of sad hand job, so it really gets you back.
Yeah, a couple of those throughout this one.
I really, and like this was a hard movie for me to actually see, because it is so long. Like, this is gonna eat your whole fucking day.
100%.
It's it. Like,
it's gone.
So yes, I loved every minute of it. I would see it again, and even at home, I would do this shit with a full-on intermission. Like, I'm gonna stop. I'm gonna, like, engage with my thoughts, eat some food, walk the dog, do whatever, because there were so many times where I was like, ooh, it's 9 a.m. I could see it and get home by 2. And, like, my whole day's not fun. And it's like, just try to, like, find the most open day you have and just let it happen.
I mean, is it much longer than Killers of the Flower Moon?
It, well, with the intermission, it's probably about 25 to 30 minutes longer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's like a 3 hour, I think it's like, what, 3 hours and 10 minutes of actual movie.
Yeah. Actually, with the intermission, without the intermission, it's potentially shorter than Killers of the Flower Moon. If I'm looking, because I'm pretty sure in the runtime for The Brutalist is listed at 2:15. And I think that.
2:15. Oh, minutes. Oh, okay.
And that includes the intermission.
So overall, that's Killers of the Flower Moon is about the same. It's about the same. It's shorter. It's shorter without the intermission. Yeah.
See, that's weird. I don't know why that's interesting to me, but it is.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. Yeah.
Because that other one's a masterpiece.
All right, let's keep it going. We've only got three left to go. Three classics. Maybe. Okay. Guys, what did you think about Baby Girl?
I was so interested in which order you were going to do this in, because that's it.
Well, you got to do Vampires vs. Werewolves. So,
Baby Girl is so fun. It's so weird. It's really enjoyable, and it is like almost. It might be too sexy.
Oh.
Like, I had a very difficult time watching it, and I was in the front row of a very small movie house because there were, no seats, and you could, it's a theater where you can't pick your seats. And I was like, there's no fucking way this shit's going to be full of people. And I was like, oh my God, this full is people. A full theatrical experience where everybody is watching this horned up broad get effed. It was so weird. This was probably one of the more enjoyable theatrical experiences I've had, because I got to watch so many people watch like uncomfortable shit. This and The Substance, I like had such a great time watching, but also watching people watch. I loved it. I thought Nicole Kidman was fucking phenomenal.
She's really good. Yeah.
And for her to be snubbed, which I know this is not that cast, I'm like, what does she have to do?
Yeah.
Like, what more does she have to do that to like prove that she's like so good?
Well, she wasn't doing a Lucy Arnaz impression.
That's right.
But it was like the most realistic portrayal of anything I've ever. I don't know. It was so bullshit.
I love that this is from the director of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Oh, you too. I think that's great.
That makes me very excited to see it now.
Yeah.
Antonio
Banderas is so good.
He's also really good.
That's right.
Yeah, this is a weird one. Let me just.
I agree. I was very happy with how much it is about her, and we don't ever really learn too much about Harris Dickinson's character. He's kind of kept at arm's length throughout the film, and even there, like, a lot of their actual quote-unquote relationship is done in montage, so you really only get to see her decision-making process around the
side of things.
So I like keeping it about her. I like the her not assistant, I don't know, whatever.
Girl from other movie, the fuck was it, the horror movie? Talk to me. I was about to say, let me in.
But. Oh, that's what she. Okay.
I think she's really good. And I think it's kind of fun. I like how over the top they make her be like, you were supposed to be a shiny example to women. And I think there's a bit of, like a bit of comedy to that that I think kind of worked.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as I said, a really disappointing snub in my mind. We'll talk, as I said,
I thought the movie was like so intentionally, unintentionally hilarious.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I was very much picking up what it was putting down. And my whole theater, like, everybody loved it.
Yeah.
And was like a little like, whoa, I'm wildly uncomfortable to have a shared experience this steamy together. But I don't know. I thought it ruled.
I think that there's the moment at like her kid's birthday where they're playing Le Tigre's Decepticon.
Oh,
yeah. And I was like, but like you would play that at a kid's birthday. I mean, come on.
Oh, come on.
Like, cool kid's birthday.
Exactly.
I get. All right.
I had the same thought, and I immediately allowed myself to not have that thought because I was like.
But I just think that like that speaks to how funny it was, and I don't think that I fully embraced it for that at the time. I was just like, this is odd, as opposed to like this is actually really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I need to. That's one that I want to watch again because I think that I just need to have that like. Go in with the idea that it's actually kind of a comedy as opposed to just like this is going to be intense, weird, and kind of creepy, which I guess it is all of those things too.
Yeah.
All right. Peter, are you ready to talk about?
Sorry, let me just look out the window real quick.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. I'm changing.
Oh, my gosh.
The Wolfman is a breezy, quick little flick.
Yeah,
it goes so fast. There obviously is a trauma backstory to it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, 100. Yeah, obviously. Also, and that trauma, it's like 30 minutes of it. It's act one.
Yeah. And I think it doesn't super care about it by the end of it, and doesn't like it. Does it never really. Hits you over the head with it after that, which I really liked.
Except one point it does.
Yeah, maybe, but it just, I like that it never tries to be like towards the end, be like, hey, did you like the message that we did there? Did you? I do think the creature effects are a little half baked, but not as bad as like the walk around characters at Horror Nights.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Those clips that I saw look so terrible, but I think they obscure the characters enough in like Shadows and Darkness that it really works in the movie.
Yeah. No, I think that the actual design is like, I mean, this is an original, but it is very, you know, trying to be The Fly, but like without kind of the creativity of The Fly, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't live up to The Invisible Man, though.
No, it does not. No. It does not. Yeah. No.
I figured.
Which is a tough thing to have to live up to.
Yeah.
But I think it's trying too hard to be that in a lot of ways because of like the trauma back and because of how like deep it goes into that, where he's just like, well, this is what this is. And can we just like move on? I would have actually, I probably would have like appreciated more of it. Just like a straight on, just like werewolf movie that like, I don't know, bunch of people, cabin, wolf, move on.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a whole lot better if this was just dog soldiers.
Yeah, totally. All right, then we're both saying the same thing.
Yeah,
but I think Chris Abbott's good. I can't remember her name now. Julia Gardner is good. The little girl, I don't know how old she was, but it felt like she was trying to play younger, and it didn't super work for me.
Oh, I could see. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
She was just a much like taller young girl that she was just her own age, but her how tall she was kind of made it weird, but
I've been
stronger child performance there, but it just felt like she was putting on like a younger kid voice sometimes.
I get that. Have they announced what their next monster is gonna be?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Because they should probably do like Frankenstein's monster at some point, right?
Well,
like,
two different Frankenstein movies happening now. Guillermo
I Frankenstein and I Frankenstein 2, You Frankenstein.
and Victor Frankenstein, a Victor Frankenstein sequel, the James McAvoy Daniel Radcliffe movie. No, Guillermo del Toro has a Frankenstein coming out this year.
Okay.
And then
Maggie Gyllenhaal, Bride of Frankenstein movie.
Yeah, Maggie Gyllenhaal directed Bride of Frankenstein, which is supposed to be really weird and not like a remake of Bride of Frankenstein.
Isn't it like a musical or something like that?
I heard they got a lowercase d song for it.
Oh, hey, it was one. Look, Hollywood's got to stop ripping me off. All right. Yeah, can't take this. First juror number two. Now this. Can't take it. Somebody just pay me. Awesome. All right. Cool. We got one left. I didn't do any fake outs this time. I actually thought about doing a fake out right now, but I'm not gonna, because we're going for an hour. Might as well just talk about Nosferatu. I almost did it again, but I decided not to. Nosferatu, a Robert Eggers film.
Yeah. So I did learn since watching this movie that in the original book, Dracula, he is described as having a big bushy mustache.
Yeah, I thought they were just like going off, because Eggers is, you know, obsessed with like historical accuracy.
Yeah.
So I thought that like he was just doing off like, okay, this is what a Romanian
prince or whatever
would look like.
I mean, they kind of throw that out when they're all with English accents in Romania, but you know, whatever, doesn't matter. It's fine.
But yeah, it looks fantastic, obviously. Oh, yeah.
Yes, it does.
Never a question. I think Willem Dafoe is incredible.
He is so good in everything that Eggers puts him in, because he just lets him play. Just like, go for it. Just do whatever.
He gets to go full Dafoe.
Yeah.
Yep, he gets to go full Dafoe. It's like that. It's like his big speech in the the lighthouse. And it's just like, do it the whole time. Just go for it the whole time, where you're just like shouting about like loved it. Loved it.
I don't know what it is though, but I went in being like, okay, this is going to be one of my top movies. And I left like being like, that was fun.
Yeah, I agree.
I had really high expectations for it too.
I think it was good.
it's exactly the story. Yep. It's exactly what you know. And it's a totally fine adaptation.
There is not one thing wrong with it. Right. From the lens that you're thinking about the movie, it is exactly what it should be.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way. And I think if I go back to my favorite Eggers is The Lighthouse.
And me too.
Yeah.
And The Lighthouse, with every passing year, is rising up my all-time favorites. Like, I'd love to relook at everything we've done since we started this cast, because The Lighthouse might be my favorite movie. And that had so much weirdness and humor and shit in it that I feel like definitely this had. It had weirdness, but maybe not as much humor. And I just feel like Eggers, don't stop. Maybe don't adapt anything. Maybe make your next couple of things based on a story. I get it. It's all coming from some kind of story or idea, but maybe get a little more insular. Like,
well, I would inform you of the announcement this week.
Werewolf. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure will be good, but I almost want this guy to like go back in his little history book, find a fucking story no one's told.
Yeah.
And fucking tell that.
Honestly, he's just like, pick up, like, go to like a library, get like a bunch of like some microfiche of like 1860s, like North Dakota newspaper, and just like look and be like, let me find a weird story in here. And I'm just going to write a whole thing about it.
Give me something I don't think has been done yet, even though it is history. Like, remember in, I guess it would have been U.S. history? I don't know. We all learned about it though in high school. Croatoan? When there's that weird word on the fucking tree.
Yeah.
And it was in Roanoke, but it said Croatoan. All right. Do something with that.
Here's a freebie.
Yeah. It's from the 1600s or whatever the fuck. Who cares? Who knows? No, the 1600s, the Lost Colony. Give me something about that.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want. Make it. Yeah. I don't know. That's not even, you don't even need the rights. Just do it.
Yeah. Just do it.
But yeah, this is like, again, like I wish I could like either complain or rave about something. But no, it's solid, but it's a known quantity.
I liked Lily Rose Depp for the first time in my life.
Me too. Yeah. I
agree. That was cool.
I wouldn't like be between like liking it and kind of being just like, all right, this is like dead. I don't know. I wasn't fully sold, but like when she did sell, I was fully bought in, but I also felt like it kind of wavered sometimes.
I think he's just better than this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like if you're going to be the guy who never makes a movie set before like the 1900s, I'm good with that. But
yeah,
do shit. Like I don't need a remake.
On that, as I said, he's got werewolf lined up, 13th century werewolf tale, which feels like I wish there was a bigger zag, as we said.
And then there was something else that just got announced, yes, right?
5 hours.
It's the present day.
He 5 hours ago, he's been announced to direct a Labyrinth sequel.
Right. Like, I don't need that.
I don't need that either.
That's exactly what I don't need. Anyone, that's like Joseph Kaczynski could do that.
Wow.
As long as there's some planes or cars going fast. I don't know. Like, you don't need to do this. You are better than this. And you're the kind of guy who's always going to do your own thing. Keep doing your own thing. Give me the Krotoan movie.
Like there's part of it that's almost like going down like a I don't know, like a Del Toro type of road now, where like it's starting to be a little too not that any of
it's
like,
almost like a it will become a parody soon.
Yeah.
I need to know why this is the second podcast you've talked about Roanoke on.
Is it?
Yes.
Is it?
Maybe I'm just really interested in Roanoke. I mean,
somebody's got to make the movie.
But give me Krotoan. There's a story there. What happened?
But I think it's the weirdness that's missing from it. And I think that you're right, that it is like there, it's someone else's script. It's, you know, don't get me wrong. Like it, all of the shots, it's incredibly well done. The shadows, the costumes, everything is like really, really well done. But like it is, there is something about like, you know, the lighthouse when you think about it, where like, it's just weird at times. There's a scene where, you know, the camera is showing the lighthouse like perpendicular and then just like turns right up.
Yeah, it's like, just everything about it. The aspect ratio in that whole movie is weird.
Oh,
and I know I'm now holding Eggers to the standard of, and I think The Witch fucking rules too, but
totally.
Lighthouse was just, I'm like, it was proof of concept that this guy can work at a level that many others cannot. And because I know he can work at that level, I want to see what he does unencumbered by other people. Like, I'd be just as pissed off if Ari Aster started making... And Bo is Afraid is not good, and it's also great. But if Ari Aster starts, like, making, I don't know, movies you think that Hollywood would beg him to make, I'll be pissed off.
What is, like, he doing next?
I think a Western.
Okay. I can't remember any announcement about him.
He's got something.
Western would actually be pretty cool.
But I'm like, do your own thing, dude. Like, don't take the bag. And now, like, this movie is a huge financial success. So the bags are being, like, backed up onto him. Like, you got to do this. You got to do that. We need another, he's like going to fall into, well, he already did. I was going to say fall into IP, and he kind of, that just happened.
There used to be like, as you know, I'm trying to think about like what directors were like. There's like a ton of examples, but like where they do like one big movie, one indie movie, like one big budget, like one really small budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scorsese said that, right?
And I think that would really work for this. But I also think that, like, he probably wants to go so deep into some of the mythology that, like, the writing of the script, like, it was The Witch and then The Lighthouse, right? And there was how many years in between those?
A lot.
Probably.
Like four or five?
Three to four, because The Witch would have been, like, 2015 or 16. Lighthouse was, what, 18 or 19?
Yeah. Yeah. So like, and I think that that's probably part of it, is that like he goes deep into those things. And I don't know how long it took for like the Northmen and stuff like that. But like even that was fine, but it was still kind of straightforward compared to at least the Lighthouse.
Yeah, there were no zags. It was there's nothing wrong with it.
No. And also another beautiful film.
Yeah, it looks great. Like, you're so talented. You might be one of the most talented filmmakers making films. Like, go and find the shit you liked when you were in college. All like of the weird, yes, like Roanoke, or the whatever old English story, like that no one's done properly. Give me that.
Yeah.
The Canterville Ghost, even. Give me that shit. I don't know. Like, get some old Brit Lit or some old, just something old that hasn't been done that no one knows. Give me that, my guy.
All right. What about YA?
Oh, I mean, God. Yeah, do Fear Street. Like, he could do the next Fear Street. Like, let's go.
Red. yeah, but he's great. And Nosferatu is still, it's good.
It's solid. It's solid. It's the silence just, in it, the sound design. You've got to be in a dark room. You got to be in it. Like, it is like the
historical accuracy. Like,
yep.
You know, he's putting every bit. Like, that's my thing. I'm like, you're so thoughtful. Yeah. I want to see what happens again when you really lean into, like, I don't know, thinking about a type of people. Because I bet the Lighthouse, and I haven't read anything or listened to him, but like the Lighthouse Virginians. He made. Sure. Yeah. Let's say
somewhere in Virginia. Somewhere where something.
Let's maybe
just disappear.
That's an interesting story. I'd like to know more about what happened. It's a little odd.
Totally. Super odd.
He's super great odd. Though, and I just believe in his abilities so much. I want to see him actually, like, make, like, hit the mark again.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But as we keep saying, and we just all expected to leave the theater with Nosferatu fever.
Yes.
Basically.
I wanted to have the same disease that all those rats brought over to England. Yeah. And I didn't.
Shame.
Also, unrelated. I don't know that we talked about. No, Peter, you might have mentioned it. The Last Voyage of the Demeter. Didn't hate it.
No, I think it's a fun movie.
It's totally fine. It's totally. It's exactly what it says it is too.
I want that. That's,
think of at least nothing's wrong with that title.
Yeah. Fully accurate title. It's very much just we definitely talked about it on this podcast before. There was something about, not to like keep harping on it, but like when we walked out of the Lighthouse, there was this feeling of just like, I don't know what I just saw, but the world seems a little bit different right now.
Yeah.
And I happened to see you in that theater.
I literally bought the seat right next to you. I was like, this is a really weird
coincidence. It was so random.
So I was like, hey Russ. And this was just like solid Dracula, better than Wolfman. Yeah. All right. So coming up next on time on the pod, I don't know why I started doing this part, but next time on the podcast, we're going to be doing top tens of the year. It'll be exciting.
Jeez.
I put together a short list. I think we probably all have. I don't know who's got their 10 done yet, Peter.
Not.
I've got my top seven in no particular order, and I'm trying to fill out the next three. That's where I'm at right now.
I like trying to pretend, Tiggs, that your list doesn't change at least two times while we're recording the top 10 podcast.
to be fair, like, where does Madam Web show up?
Yeah,
when do I just like throw it in there at the end?
Did Carry On make it?
Oh, well, obviously Carry On made it. There is actually, as I've been thinking about this year and like kind of looking through all the movies, I think that this might be, this year, we might just have like all wildly different lists.
I think so.
I think it was a weird year for movies.
Yeah. I think that this is going to be the most.
And a weird year for like device. What connected with someone versus what connected with someone else.
Which is to make the Oscars podcast, which is coming up next, frustrating No, the Oscars podcast is coming up after that. Frustrating because the Oscars still found a way to nominate the same six movies in every category.
Yeah. It's wild. It's wild. Like, I mean, yeah.
Wouldn't this be like the Spread the Love year because there was no clear front runner in anything?
Yeah. You would think so. Yeah. You would think so. You would think that, you know, I don't know. Smile 2 gets all the awards, but nothing. Not a single mention. That is on my short list, just so we all know.
Fair.
Little spoiler alert for that right now.
I'm pretty sure me and you are on the same page about the one, if not two, worst movies of the year.
I want to say I've got four on my list right now for it. Okay. And there, at least one of them we definitely both agree on.
Yeah.
Because we felt this way about another one. We'll all find out in real time next time.
All right.
But until then, you can find us on the web, moviemoviepodcast.com. You can find Russ everywhere as Russ Incredible. You can find Peter as, oh, I don't remember, the 12 Nights of Pete or something bullshit like that on Letterboxd.
12 Angry Peters.
12 Angry Peters on Letterboxd.
Changed it. Okay.
Yeah.
You can find me as Johnny Tiggs on Letterboxd and Strava. Please follow me. Alex, did you Letterbox?
Nah.
I think you would like it.
I think I would too.
The bit is too deep now. You can't get out of it. Yeah.
We're just going to have to go back to the sharing a number from Alex's phone number bit.
Oh, God. No, that got too real.
Like, when I think back on that, that was actually. You know what? But Alex, like, everyone already knows it. Like, it's out there. Like, someone just Google Alex's name plus social security number, see what shows up. And if it's for the public.
You tell you what, you can find me on Steam.
You can find Alex on Steam as
just in general.
Yeah. But you know what? Yeah. We'll keep the name from you. You go find Alex on Steam. Let him know. Yeah. All right. Well, we will catch you all next time as we talk about our top tens. Until then, thank you all for being here. And thank you all for listening to the Movie Podcast.
It's just trying to figure out how to make the sound of lapping up milk. And
I was also thinking about milk. I was like, I drink your milkshake. No, that's not even it.